Hashtag murder may contain explicit and disturbing material and may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello!
And welcome to...
Hashtag murder!
Woo! I'm Scar.
And I'm Dustin.
And we are millennials who love murder.
We do.
We do.
Love and some drama.
Where'd we just get back from, honey?
Kentucky.
The Tuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We went to Churchill Downs.
We did. It was a great time. We went to Thurby.
Yeah, we're not going with all those people to the Kentucky Derby. That seems absurd.
It's a lot of people.
There was a lot of people there.
That was already a lot of people.
Yeah, there was a ton of people there.
Yeah, you made it on the big screen, honey.
I did.
You had your hat, you had your cane, the little outfit I dressed you in.
Oh, that was a fun little costume.
I know. We looked absolutely ridiculous. I loved it, though.
I thought we looked fabulous.
It was fun. And Harley and Clinton went, and Kylie and Brennan, and Lauren.
Yeah, we had a great time.
It was a hoot.
Yeah.
And we won.
We did win.
What was the horse's name?
Bernardini. 30-1.
Yeah. That was great.
That was fabulous.
And that was your first bid on a horse ever.
It was.
And we won. It was a good time. But we went over to Lauren's house and hung out with her and Chris and the kids.
Tried to figure out this remote recording thing.
Yes. Oh, okay. So that has not been discussed yet. So Alex has decided to move on, and she's got a lot going on.
She's got big things going on. She's going back to school. She's working full time. She's got a 10-year-old now.
Yes.
And Kayla's also got school as well, so
yes.
There's not enough hours in the day.
There's literally not.
So for the foreseeable future, boys and girls,
it will be Dustin and I, and we are working on learning how to record remotely. I will figure it out. I am technologically challenged, but I will figure this out. I got this, I think.
It may take us some time. We got some good IT help coming in, I hope.
Yes. Yes. But yeah, Kentucky was a hoot. We stayed with Kylie. We stayed with Lauren.
Ate way too much food. Great food.
You had like 7 hamburgers.
I had a 4 or 5 day streak there, didn't I?
Where you had a burger for lunch and dinner.
I did. That was, it's not a bad, that's vacation, honey.
That's vacation food.
That's what you do.
That's what you do. Yep. You're right.
Some serious comfort food going on here.
Yeah.
Clinton almost had to get carried out.
Yep.
Of Thurby.
He had a moment.
He did.
He had several moments.
He had a lot of moments.
He got real sweaty. He had to pour water on
himself. Pouring water on himself.
Oh my God. But speaking of fancy things, Dustin has a story for me.
I do?
You do.
Oh, that's right. I am telling you a story this week, aren't I?
Oh, my God.
Do I have notes?
Don't you do this. You got your scripts, honey?
Yeah. You got some marmalade in there?
Stop. I'm excited to hear this one. I kind of vaguely know it because we tried to record this one like 2 days ago, and we couldn't do it. So here we are again. We're doing it.
She thought that I may have imbibed
a bit too much.
Just a touch too much. Which, meh. You can't leave me unattended.
I know. You need constant watching, honey. That's what I'm here for.
Oh, I need a monitor.
All right, tell me.
All right, pack your bags, honey. We are going to Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh, okay. It's a staycation.
It's a staycation. So we're staying right here in town. Oh. We're going back, not too far, about 15 years, 2009.
Oh. I did not live here then.
No. No, you didn't. What were you doing in 2009? I was graduating college.
And I was a junior in high school.
It only took 9 years for me to graduate college with a bachelor's. Needless to say, I had a great time my college years.
Oh, honey.
All right, Scar. This is the case of the missing socialite.
Oh.
Yes. That's how they titled it in the documentary that I watched.
Okay.
And so, seems pretty appropriate.
In any life that I will ever live, past, present, future, will never be described as a socialite.
I doubt that I ever will. No.
We're just not fancy enough.
No.
I mean, maybe in the next life, but I doubt it.
If any brother It would be Clinton.
Yeah.
It would be Clinton and Harley.
Yeah.
They would be the ones. They would be the ones that, that
living in downtown Charleston.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of living in downtown Charleston, so she comes from a well-known and affluent family, and her house on the Battery. So when we say Charleston socialite,
she's a Charlestonian.
She's a Charlestonian.
Yes.
Okay.
Through and through.
So she is proper Charleston. She's not in the burbs like us. This young lady's name is Catherine Waring. She goes by Kate. And the Waring family has been in Charleston for generations. She is the 8th or 9th generation to be in Charleston and actually be born here, too.
Wow. So what year would that be that her family... Is she her OG? Been here...
I don't know if she was here at... I don't know if we're... Well, the Mayflower was up north. Quite a while. There's large difference in time span. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. She was described as a true daughter of Charleston. And now when I'm sitting here thinking about how many people do you actually know born in Charleston? Or even in the Charleston area. I never really run into that many out of most of the folks I know.
I think it's just Alex that I know.
I know a few, like four
She's
or five.
She's born and raised, but that's yeah, about it.
That's about it. Most folks you run into?
Not from here.
Seems like most people have moved here because of the beautiful climate and the beautiful scenery that we have down here. And honestly, that's why I moved back. So
that's also why I moved here.
Mm-hmm.
I literally typed in best places to live in the United States, and this was one of the top five. And that those are then all the places that I applied to. And then your brother hired me, and that's why I'm here right now.
So her father? Oh, God, I'm just going to breeze right past that, aren't I? Yeah. I really am. Her father, a well-known attorney, champion of the underdog, would do pro bono cases and try to help out those less fortunate as much as possible. It's kind of a family tradition that her dad's side of the family and mom's side, you know, actually both sides of the family have. So this really was a very well-to-do but down-to-earth family who was doing very well for themselves while also still trying to help out their local community. Catherine Waring was born on May 5th, 1981 in Charleston, South Carolina, and she got her degree from my favorite college.
College of Charleston?
No.
Oh.
UNC. The Tar Heels.
Ah, okay.
And she got her degree in the classics.
What does that mean?
I had to Google it. I've heard
literature?
People... Yeah, that's basically what it breaks down to. It's primarily a liberal arts major, and it's studying Greek and Latin.
Okay.
So they're going to be
looking... I'm here for the Greek. The Latin, that's a dead language.
It's a dead language.
No one speaks that. Although there are lots of root words and, it, you know...
Yes.
In the medical field, that I could see where that would be prevalent.
So she's looking back at all these old texts, Greece, Rome, so she can look at the original writings and study the classic philosophers, Aristotle, and yeah, no. Pretty neat. What are you going to do with that outside of, like, teach?
What do you do with this information? Start a podcast, I guess.
While in school, she traveled. She actually traveled to Greece and got to do an archaeological dig while she was in school.
My dream.
Fabulous.
Dream come true.
Fabulous.
If I could stumble upon a dinosaur bone, my life would be fulfilled
Would
forever.
It be complete?
That would be it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Keep that in mind, honey.
Okay. We're going to Utah. Again.
I'd go back there. That was amazing.
So your girl is good with languages.
Sounds like it.
She's speaking one language that nobody speaks. Mm-hmm. When's the last time you heard somebody speaking Greek? I've never.
Here?
Yeah.
Never.
Never. Never heard it.
No.
In 2009, she is 28 years old. She's kind of been bouncing around, not doing a whole lot. Jobs here and there, nothing.
Trying to figure out what she wants to do.
Yeah, she's a 20-something-year-old. She's been traveling a lot. She's been all over the world.
She's a jet setter.
She really is. I mean, she's doing it on her parents' dime. But yeah, you know what? They're not
hurting.
They
got the money.
They're not hurting.
Yeah.
When she's 28, she decides that, you know what? I'm going to go back to school. She's just returned from a trip from Russia.
Oh.
She's had a wonderful time over there. She's fallen in love with Russian culture and their literature. And she's like, I'm going to study classical Russian now.
Okay.
She's also managed to pick up another language. She speaks Russian now.
Wow.
She just...
Good for her.
Six or seven languages is what they said that she could speak pretty fluently, if not at least understand very, very well.
Yeah, impressive.
Yeah, I barely speak English, so when it comes, no. Google Translate is my best friend, and it is wonky in the best of times.
Yes. I have my strong second grade Spanish education.
Oh, at best second grade.
Maybe
first grade. The guys at the job will just be looking at me like, oh boy. And their English is so much better than my Spanish will ever be.
Yeah.
Even the ones that are like, no, I don't speak. And I'm like, yeah, you do.
You do.
You do.
Yeah.
Right? You're killing
it. I can understand you.
You're killing it. We're communicating. If I was trying to speak in your language, there'd be nothing happening here. You'd be like. In the summer of 2009, like every summer, her parents don't stay in the Battery home.
Oh. They got a summer home.
They got a summer home. They're not traveling far away, though.
Oh, I was going to say California or, I don't know, Oregon?
No, the father's law practice won't allow him to really go too far away, and they love Charleston, so they just have one on the Isle of Palms.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
It's like 5 miles from the Battery.
Yeah, 5 miles, maybe 15, 20 minutes.
Okay.
Drive.
That's funny, to have two houses in the same...
city, basically. City. I mean, they're in the same county. For sure.
Yeah. Huh. Okay.
So you got the beach home and you know.
You got the beach home and then you got the
It's on the water home. Both of them are on the water.
They're both on the water.
Hey, you got it. You got it. Kate stays during the summertime. She stays in the Battery house by herself. She's 5 miles away. She's lived there her whole life. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
Her and her family were kind of like my family. We constant communication. Talk almost every day to at least...
Got that text thread going.
Got the text thread going. They're communicating. If they don't hear from each other at least every other day, then they're going to start worrying about one another.
Oh.
And that is the case on June 15th. On June 15th, after not hearing from Kate, her parents decide to call 911 because they haven't heard from her in 2 days. The last time her parents had spoken to her was on June the 12th. And according to both parents, the conversation was... extremely normal, casual. Nothing seemed out of place. She didn't seem scared or anything. She was telling them about her plans to go out that evening. She was going to go out with one of her close friends that the family knew by the name of Ethan Mack. This is a typical Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night for them. They're going to go out downtown.
Are her and Ethan lovers?
No, just really, really good friends. They've known each other for years.
Like my wonton.
Correct. Yeah.
Yes.
Just a great buddy. So her and Ethan... have hung out all the time. This is a totally normal thing. After not hearing from her for 2 days, after they called the police,
After she was supposed to go to dinner with Ethan.
Yes, she's the 12th, they talked to her. I'm going out with Ethan tonight. Last time they talked to her, it's the 15th now. They're on the phone with the police. Dad's jumping in the car. He's driving back over to the house. When her dad got to the house, he noticed that all the lights were on, which is atypical. Normally turns most, if not everything on. Like he said, almost all the house lights were on. He also thought that maybe she had just run out.
Yeah.
And left the lights on, and she's going to be back shortly. That, however, was not going to be the case. He did notice that all of her medications were there. Her purse was gone. No, her purse was gone. Keys, car's gone. Keys are gone. All that. Car's not gone. But all of her personal items that you would take on a regular basis, cell phone, wallet, purse, that kind of stuff has been taken with her. But anything like her makeup, her medications, things that if you were going to go off traveling somewhere, you would take with you were all still there in the house. So this led her dad to believe, she didn't just hop on a plane somewhere and go on a trip.
She's a world traveler.
She is a traveler.
But
she would never...
Yeah, from what you've described, I would assume that she would have told someone where she was going.
Yes, absolutely. The police start the investigation by reaching out to Kate's friends. Standard operating procedure. See if they can get in contact with all of her friends and close family members. Who's the last person to talk to her?
Which is Buddy Ethan.
Which is going to be
presumably.
Ethan.
Presumably.
Presumably. And, unless she met somebody else later that evening. And see if they can track down her last known location. So the police do start with Ethan Mack. And a little background on Ethan. Ethan Mack is 30 years old at this time. He is also a Charleston native. He, however, did not grow up on the Battery. He grew up on John's Island.
Oh, okay.
Now, there are parts of John's Island that are, especially now, very well developed.
Newer sections. That's kind of like a up-and-coming area.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so many islands out here.
Yeah.
So, the property is slim pickings near the water. But at this time, you would describe John's Island, and still, for the most part, a very rural area. There are houses, there are people. It's not you know, West Ashley. It's not
packed in downtown Charleston.
There are areas where you can drive and there'd just be trees.
Yeah.
Ethan and Kate were best friends and shared everything. She was even the godmother to one of Ethan's nephews.
Huh.
And
they've been friends for a very long time.
She's basically an adopted member of the Mack family.
Oh, okay.
They would do anything for her. She would do anything for them. Everybody knows everybody. This is, like I said, typical June 12th evening. So when the police detectives talk to Ethan, he informs the detectives that last time he saw her was on June the 12th when he was at dinner with her and his fiance, Heather Camp, spelled K-A-M-P.
Oh, do we know where they went to dinner?
That was not disclosed.
Boo.
Yeah, that's what I was like. Oh man, what bar did they go to? Because it sounds like they would go to a bar, have a few drinks, and then go out to eat.
Dinner.
And then either go to one of the houses or go to another bar and just kind of hang out, which is fabulous because you can walk everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Heather was a pediatric surgeon at MUSC.
Oh.
And this dinner was kind of a celebration because Heather had just found out that she was pregnant.
Okay. All right. She's going to be a godmother again, maybe. Well, I guess not, but...
So guess who introduced Heather and Ethan?
Kate.
Kate did.
Mutual friend, like, this is my best friend, I just met the chick, probably.
She met Heather out one night, socializing, they got to chit, you know, to talking, and hit it off great, kept in contact, and she's like, oh man, I've got this awesome guy friend, I've got this awesome new girlfriend, let's put them together and see what happens.
Yeah.
Magic happened.
Matchmaker. Which I will take credit for, Lauren and Chris.
Oh, boy.
As matchmaker.
Oh, a story.
The only reason that they reconnected is because we went out to dinner and we'd had a few drinks and we wanted to go to the pumpkin thing in Louisville. And I was like, I don't want to pay for this. Let's find dates on Tinder. And then Lauren reconnected with Chris and here we are. Now they're married.
Yeah. Two kids, two dogs, two turtles, two tortoises, excuse me.
Two geckos. They had two of everything.
They really do. It's like they think they're the Ark.
Love you, Lar.
Police start reconstructing Kate's day on June the 12th. They know that she had a cab come and pick her up and take her to the gym in the morning. She had the same cab company come and pick her up from the gym and take her to CVS to pick up a couple of prescriptions. They can see her getting the prescriptions on video in the CVS, confirming, you know, that she is alive and well in the morning time.
Huh.
On June the 12th, well, we know
they're
that
already digging into security footage.
Yeah.
God damn.
Well, I mean,
this is
a super affluent socialite.
White woman.
Yes.
Yeah.
The manager of the gym reveals to detective that Kate had been in an altercation that same day, however, while she was at the gym when they go to talk to him.
This is on the 12th.
So we know that she's fine on the 12th until sometime in the evening. We haven't heard from her since the 12th. So they're just trying to get up to...
Timeline of events.
We're just trying to figure out what has gone on in her day today.
Altercation
at the gym.
She was hogging the treadmill for too long.
She wishes it was something like that.
Oh, okay.
So Kate's on the Stairmaster.
Oh, it's a Stairmaster, right. Not the treadmill.
Not the treadmill, but Kate's on the Stairmaster.
Okay.
And a woman approaches her and starts yelling at her.
Oh.
Obscenities. This woman, I'm going to give her a pass on this. It's probably not how I would have handled it. Actually, it's probably exactly how I would handle it. This woman believes that Kate's been having an affair with her husband.
Oh. Okay.
So she is, you know, telling...
They go to the same gym. Random. Okay.
So the detectives found out this woman is married to another gym employee. So the guy also works at the gym.
This is where they met. Maybe would have met if this...
Is this
a real thing, or...?
This is a gym employee, and the instructor is named Howard Gatch. G-A-T-C-H.
Hmm.
They learned that she has a bit of a fiery temper, especially when it comes to protecting her man.
Oh, the chick.
Mm-hmm. They do not give her name. They just call her Miss Gatch.
Oh.
The entire documentary. So
protected identity.
I do not know who this young lady is.
Okay.
Kate does have an affair with this guy.
Oh, scandalous.
Okay.
Oh.
There had been a previous romantic rendezvous.
Oh, Kate, you devil.
But the wife had just recently found out that this was a thing. It wasn't continuing at this time, but it had
it was a thing.
It had happened.
Oh.
So she was not out of bounds.
This is spicy. Okay.
So needless to say, Miss Gatch is rocketing to the top of the list of people that they want to talk to.
Yeah, considering this happened the day she went missing. Oh, wow. Wait, is it confirmed that she actually did go to dinner with friend
we'll get there.
Ethan?
We'll get there.
Okay, all right.
We'll get there. We're still just going through her day right now.
Okay.
And now we've got our first person that the police really want to question. So police track down Howard Gatch's wife, and she comes to the station freely. She tells the detectives that she's in the middle of a very contentious divorce with Howard.
Oh, so they're getting divorced. Why? Okay. I mean,
feelings are feelings.
Feelings.
Feelings. She also found out that, you know, this wasn't an ongoing thing. You had been cheating on me while I still was not thinking about divorcing you. Now, that may have been the straw.
The catalyst.
You know, and now she's super pissed that Kate has, quote unquote, ruined her marriage or whatever. I don't know what she's thinking.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that there was fire in her eyes.
Oh, yeah, I believe it.
Miss Gatch admits that there was a confrontation at the gym, but she said she absolutely had nothing to do with Kate's disappearance.
What terrible timing. I mean, if she really didn't have anything to do with it, terrible timing to get into an argument with someone who is missing.
100%.
That's not good.
Not good. And
not a good look.
I even wrote in here, I found it pretty curious that they only referred to her as Ms. Gatch.
Yes. Which, I mean, I guess that means she did not do it, because we do not have a first name for her.
Correct. So she gives the police an alibi. Mm-hmm. Police go and confirm the alibi very quickly, and she is eliminated as a possible suspect. They did not elaborate on what the alibi was, just like they didn't elaborate on her at all. So she's eliminated. They're moving on to the next person.
Okay.
Now, while they are talking to Miss Gatch, they ask her about her husband, Howard. When police ask Miss Gatch about her husband, they're surprised to learn that he has left the country the day before Kate was reported missing.
Okay. Okay, Howie.
He has gone on a cruise to the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm. Did he leave out of Charleston? Was this last second? I need information. I need to know.
All the phone calls by the police to Howard are sent straight to voicemail. And this has got, you know, their spidey senses are tingling right now.
Yeah. Just so happens to leave the country for a week and someone's missing? Okay. And interesting that Miss Gatch approached Kate while he was definitely not there, because he worked there.
That is absolutely true.
Mm-hmm. Didn't want that three-way conversation. She wanted to have a one-on-one with Miss Kate.
She did. Uh-huh. She wanted just to give her a piece of her mind and let her know.
Yeah. On the Stairmaster. That's already exhausting enough. We don't need to add drama to this.
You don't need to go to the gym to walk upstairs. There are fucking stairs true. Everywhere.
I could walk up and down our stairs all day.
All day.
I'd choose not to.
For free. I do. I will never understand that. You get on a treadmill, you get on a Stairmaster, you get on a bike. Unless it's raining.
Yeah.
Why don't you go outside? All the bugs and heat and shit are out
That's
there.
That's where the nature is, honey.
And all the people. After a week, Howard gets back from his cruise, notices he's got a couple voicemails from the Charleston Police Department, and he reaches out to him.
Oh, okay. He doesn't run.
He
okay.
does not. He doesn't go anywhere. And the detectives are like, hey, can you come down to the station? We want to ask you some questions. And Howard complies, drives down to the station, and does an interview with the police officers.
Mm-hmm.
He tells them in the interview, he's like, I get it. Me leaving the country after...
A little auspicious.
It's definitely, definitely suspicious. But he explained to the police officers that he had had this trip planned for 6 months. And he went.
Yeah.
During the interview, Howard does not deny that there was an affair when he was questioned about it. And he had indicated that he and his wife had already separated when he and Kate started dating about a month ago. So this was not...
Oh, so they were already...
But still...
Miss Gatch was having a moment.
She...
Miss Gatch has a moment. That's okay. A good children's book title.
Howard says they met at the gym one day, and they just hit it off. Went on some dates, and It burned bright, but it was short-lived, apparently, because they weren't seeing each other after a month.
Oh, so they weren't even still seeing each other.
No.
And he had already broken up with, or already, the divorce was already started. Although, as we know, divorces take a year here.
You gotta be separated for a year.
Which is wild.
So stupid. Let's not get into politics. Howard tells the police that Kate had actually spoken to each other several times on the 12th. They saw each other at the gym that afternoon, and they talked again at about 10 p.m., and Kate tells Howard that he is...
I thought you said he wasn't at the gym. Or did I say that?
You said that.
Oh, okay. Never mind. So he was there.
Yeah, he's at the gym. Now, he may have been at lunch. I don't know exactly where he was when all of this drama was going down at the gym where his soon-to-be ex-wife is yelling at Kate. And why I don't, also, they don't go into any explanation as to why Kate and him are speaking at 10 o'clock at night. But Kate informs Howard that she's riding around with Heather and Ethan. And he got one final text message around midnight. And it was a strange text, he thought, based on all the previous text conversations that he's had with Kate. And I got a little bit, just a short quote. She said she was going to Greenville to pick up some lovely. That's the text at midnight.
To pick up some lovely?
Yeah. L-O-V-E-L-Y. Some pick up some lovely.
I wonder what could have been typed there to autocorrect to lovely.
He's, you know, showing the police his phone, and he had no idea what she was referring to or why she needed to go to Greenville to get it.
And what's that, like 3 hours from here? She said she was going right then? At midnight?
At midnight.
Oh.
He checks his phone the next morning and sees that she has not texted him, but he's busy getting ready for his cruise, packing his stuff. He then gets a phone call that morning of the 13th from Kate's dad, and he's just saying, hey, have you seen or spoken to Kate?
Last I heard was midnight last night, and she was going to Greenville.
He didn't relay that message to dad.
Okay. I'm putting a little flag up for Howard.
Okay.
Got a little pin in Howie.
At this point, Howard tells the investigators that he was worried because he knows the type of relationship her family has, and that her dad, you know, calling to look for her means that he hasn't spoken to her in a few days and that the family's worried.
Also weird that dad has a fair dude's number. Why does he have his number?
It sounds like they shared all the tea with each other.
Oh, well, that's good.
No secrets.
Yeah. Good for them. That has never been the case in my family, but good for them.
I wrote down, I thought that it was a little weird.
It is weird.
I know you planned your shit 6 months ago, and I know that they're leaving.
Cruise? Yeah.
But now, at this point, you got a weird text at midnight. You've got on again, off again girlfriend, somebody that you might possibly still be seeing, whom you're obviously still talking to. Because you're getting text messages late in the evening, and you're still going to get on the cruise.
Well, he didn't know anything was wrong. Oh, her dad had called.
Her dad's called. He even says, you know, I was a little worried, but I still went on the cruise.
I mean, he'd already paid for it. There's probably no refund.
I mean, well, you know.
He might not be rolling in the dough, such as the Waring family.
No, he's a gym employee. I can go ahead and fucking tell you he's not rolling in. It's not his gym that they were working at.
He may be a personal trainer. They make pretty good money.
He ain't making lawyer fucking money. Yeah. He ain't making live on the battery Isle of Palms summer house money.
That's true.
Howard agrees and passes a polygraph test, and his alibi, for the most part, checks out, and he genuinely seems concerned to the police, so he is eliminated as a suspect. Detectives then go about questioning more of Kate's friends, and it seems like a lot of her friends got a very similar, if not the same, text message around midnight on June 13th.
Going to pick up some lovely?
In Greenville. Basically indicating that she was leaving town.
So she sent this to multiple people, multiple friends. Oh,
All of her friends confirmed that this was a very atypical message.
Yeah.
For her.
It's not like code word for pot. It's like...
Yeah, and not only that, she's 28.
Also, I think lovely, like if you typed in money wrong, it would maybe change to lovely, autocorrect.
Yeah, definitely weed would not, or pot. I mean, I'm trying to think. Lovely seems like it would be more of a thing for, like, ecstasy or... But all of our friends...
That's not what's happening here.
That's... All of our friends are pretty much like, that's not what's happening here. There's no way at midnight she's traveling to Greenville. Something is weird. She didn't send that text is pretty much what all of our friends are telling the detectives. A week passes now. There are no new leads. There's no evidence that there has been any foul play. There's no blood anywhere outside of the fact that her medicine and makeup.
So maybe they're thinking like a mental break of sorts?
They have no idea. Oh. The police are still entertaining the idea that she just may have gone just left somewhere. Town.
Yeah.
I mean, they have nothing to say otherwise. Nobody's still heard from her. Now, several weeks have passed and the case has grown colder still. Hmm. Her parents are growing extremely frustrated with the police. And I can't blame them. I would be worried sick if my son or daughter was missing.
Yeah.
At this time, the family reaches out to one of the best criminal defense attorneys in the Charleston area, Andy Savage. Andy Savage works with a private detective, and that's why they called him, because they know that he has
a
private...
They're bringing in a PI.
They're going to bring in a private detective so that they can...
Weird that the police weren't, like, more invested in this, being as... Just who she is, how you've described her. Like, you'd think there would be boots on the ground. We are searching high and low, looking for this person.
That's what I was also saying. And now they're going out and spending their own money to hire somebody else. So
weird.
Andy Savage works with a former Charleston detective named James Randolph. And several folks refer to them as the A-Team. These guys are the best at what they do.
They know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing. They know how to dig up information, and since he's a former police officer, he knows about chain of custody, and since he's a lawyer, they know what they can and can't do, so they are going to go about it in a very professional manner. They start building their own case outside of the police investigation, and they quickly come to the conclusion that Kate's family did, that she just wouldn't leave town without telling anyone. They also notice that there's no credit card usage. And she hasn't spoken to any of her friends or family in a few weeks now. And based on her phone records and credit card records, that's just not...
Typical.
Possible.
Yeah.
You know, all communication doesn't just stop.
Yeah.
And she has to eat. She needs to, you know...
Yeah, groceries, gas.
She doesn't have another card or anything like that. Her parents provide the card.
Huh.
They can see, you know, they have access to all of her stuff.
Something tells me... Something happened on the 12th, and that was probably it.
So the detectives go about getting Kate's cell phone records, and they can track her movements based on it pinging off of cell phone towers on June the 12th. They can see that she spent the majority of her evening downtown, and then around 11 o'clock, they can see her phone hitting towers in the James Island area, which is nowhere near her house. You know, it's 6, 8, 10 miles away. Not super far away.
Yeah, not super far, but
not
there. Not towards Greenville either.
No.
Other opposite direction.
Yeah, not even making an effort to get to Greenville. The investigative team begins canvassing the James Island area to see if anybody remembers seeing Kate. Within a few days, they get a promising tip from a landlord. The landlord tells the investigators that one of the people that they've already interviewed lives on John's Island, that said he lives on John's Island, actually lives on James Island.
Ethan... Best friend, BFF forever, Ethan.
Investigators are able to find out that Ethan Mack, in fact, does live on James Island with his mother and not on John's Island.
Ah, which is much closer to downtown than John's Island.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The investigators start to wonder why Ethan would lie to them about where he lives in the wake of Kate's disappearance.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm putting a flag up for Mr. Ethan.
Investigators know that the last place her cell phone pinged off of was a cell tower on James Island, and now they find out that he lives on James Island. So the investigative team begins to keep a little bit of an eye on Ethan Mack and Heather Camp. They've been lied to. Let's see.
Yeah, why lie about where you live? Why do that?
Let's kind of figure out what's going on with these two people.
Also, another easily checkable thing. Like, oh, you don't live on John's Island, you live on James Island.
Yeah, they didn't explain why the landlord knew to call the police about Ethan outside of the canvas.
Maybe there was a news report. And
there were several.
He was like, oh, he lives here.
There were several. They begin to dig into this couple's life. So they're starting to take apart Heather Camp and Ethan Max, who they are, where they've been, where they're from, what they're about. They're digging into that. Heather indicated to Kate that she had a medical degree and that she loved helping people.
Yeah, she works at MUSC, the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Kate, basically, upon meeting her, opened up her life to her, introduced her to her best friend.
Where did you meet her? At the gym?
At the bar.
Oh.
Just at a bar downtown socializing. They didn't specify.
Oh, okay.
And like I said earlier, Heather and Ethan were introduced by Kate.
Yeah.
Heather and her had grown super close. She thought it would be a perfect match, and it was. Once they met each other, those two were pretty much inseparable. So the private investigator soon discovered that Heather is not who she claims to be.
Oh, no.
Dig into Miss Camp and find out that she's got a pretty lengthy rap sheet. She's been charged with at least 3 counts of armed robbery in 2000.
Heather!
She was also arrested in 2006 for forging her own grandmother's name on a check.
Oh, no.
Basically,
Is she even a doctor?
No.
Oh, no. You know, what show did we watch last night?
Oh,
Baby Reindeer.
Baby Reindeer. Oh, boy.
She kept saying she was a lawyer. Actually, she was a lawyer.
She does have a law degree.
Oh, but she made up everything about herself. That's a weird show. I'm not sure I recommend it. I don't know if I like it or not, but it was interesting. But anyways, it kind of reminds me of this.
That woman, Martha in the show, serial liar, Heather. Serial liar, pretty much a con artist.
She was just hanging out downtown to see who she could bump elbows with.
You got it.
Okay. Now, Heather, I got you.
Heather had actually, while pretending to be a nurse, done a blood draw from a 6-year-old. Yes, impersonating a nurse this time. She always liked to impersonate people that were
well-respected. Yes.
Somebody tells you that they're a nurse, I immediately have immense respect for what they do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're doing a job that I could never do. So she wants that sense of
honor, respect. The military, but you really weren't.
Stolen valor.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly what she's doing. She wanted to be important. She wanted people to think that she was important. So,
wait, why did she draw this child's blood at the hospital? She just showed up in a little outfit?
They didn't go into a ton of detail, and I was trying to read on it, but it sounds like, yes, she was at a doctor's office, and she does a blood draw on this girl to check for something that you couldn't even tell from a blood draw. And I don't know if the parents put it together or the doctors put it together, but either way, Heather gets the hell out of Dodge before any charges could be pressed. And she was doing it under an alias. She's got several aliases in her past. This woman is definitely just not to be trusted.
Okay.
So she's ingratiated herself.
So random.
Yes, she's ingratiated. What, like you said, she was rubbing elbows with as many affluent people as possible. She found out, Kate Waring. Okay. Live on the Battery, do you?
Just so happened to run into her. Or was this planned? She wanted to run into her. Oh, okay. All right.
Boy, you're just going on here, aren't you? Why don't you just tell me the rest of the story here, babe? Gotta find my spot. Mass polygraph. Gotta hate it when it does it. So Heather's a serial liar. She can't not lie to pretty much everybody that she meets.
How old is she? Same age? 28?
Right there at the same age. Everybody's 28, 29, 30. They're all right there. At this point, the investigators begin to dig into Kate Waring's financials a little bit deeper. Kate's father told investigators about a suspicious transaction 3 days after Kate disappeared, where someone had tried to cash a check in the amount of $4,500. The check was signed by Kate Waring and was dated on June the 12th, the day that she disappeared. Only problem in the...
So someone's cashing this check.
Somebody's trying to, but it didn't go through because...
Is it Heather?
It doesn't go through. I can't confirm or deny who it would be at this point, honey. The reason the check couldn't be cashed...
All the accounts were frozen.
No, this is on the 15th.
Or she didn't have $4,500.
She didn't have $4,500. She had $200 in her checking account. Remember, she ain't got no money.
Yeah, it's all her parents' money.
It's all of her parents' money.
Which is fine. I mean, but like, yeah.
So the private investigators reach out to the head of security for the bank, and they're like, hey, can you check on this time and date of who tried to cash this thing? Guess who they saw?
And the
investigator's like, you know, I can't send you a video right this second, but I can send you some screenshots of the thing. I can have the video to you later. Who did they find?
Heather.
No.
Oh, yeah. BFF Ethan.
Ethan Mack.
Oh, no.
They got a picture of Ethan Mack standing at the teller's station trying to cash this check.
That's fucked up. Oh, no.
Yeah.
I mean, well, judging by the look on your face, this is Not good.
Investigators know that he's lied to them about where he lives, and now he's on camera trying to cash a forged check from an account of his friend who's been missing for three days. And at this point, she's been missing for a few weeks. Mm. Actually, at this point, it is 2 months since Kate's disappearance.
Oh.
Investigators want to compare Ethan and Heather's handwriting so they can see who forged the check. They're not exactly sure how to do this without making both of them suspicious. They don't want them to pack up and leave town. They already know that Heather's a flight risk. She will bolt real quick. They don't know what kind of funds they have. They know that it's not a ton. So they reach out to their landlord, the same guy that called them and let them know that Ethan didn't live. At this point, Heather and Ethan are kind of bunking together, and this guy's, he's got, sounds like a couple of units in the backyard. So they reach out to the landlord and they're like, hey, we need to get a sample of their writing. And this is when they find out that Ethan and Heather are about 3 months behind on their rent, and the landlord's actually going through the paperwork of getting them evicted.
Which is probably $4,500.
Yeah, that would be my guess, too.
Oh, God. But he's got their handwriting because they signed the lease.
They've got their signature, and that's it. They want some actual handwriting. More than one word. They want several sentences. So the landlord reaches out to Ethan and Heather and says, hey.
Is the landlord, does he do some stuff?
Landlord's going to help him out here. Landlord reaches out to Heather and Ethan.
Yes, landlord.
They did not give this gentleman's name. They said that he reaches out to Ethan and Heather and basically lays it out for him. It's like, guys, I'm doing the eviction paperwork, but you guys have been good tenants.
I need you to write me a letter as to why I should let you stay.
Not quite like that, but he gets them to write a promissory note saying that I, Ethan Mack, and Heather has to write one as well, saying that I, Heather Camp, will make sure that I pay you back XYZ dollars by XYZ date.
I love this landlord. I love him. I love it so much. Or her. Do we know?
We don't know. Just the landlord. We do not know. They just say the landlord. We don't know if it's male, female, how old, how young. We don't know anything about them.
Good for them. They've seen true crime documentaries. They want to be in on it.
Now that the private investigators have these two handwritten notes, they have enough handwriting for experts to compare with the forged check. They wanted to have as many letters so that they could compare them, because if you're forging something, your handwriting, they wanted to see as many letters as absolutely possible. They take this to a handwriting expert, and the handwriting expert is able to say that without a doubt that Heather Camp forged this check.
That bitch. Also, handwriting analysis, very cool. We should look into that.
It's definitely pretty neat. I don't know if I
love it.
I don't know if I like the, well, if you slant your letter this way.
It might be a little like zodiac, horoscope.
That part, but the actual handwriting analysis where they're like, this person wrote this letter versus that person.
It's neat.
That's neat.
I like it. We should look into that.
The place where Ethan and Heather are living has two houses behind the landlord. So while surveilling them, they're still watching them. The private investigators begin to notice that when Ethan's away at work, that Heather is scooting on over to the other house and hanging out during the day.
Their neighbor's house?
Uh-huh. Hanging out at the neighbor's house. Another guy lives there, single dude. Terry Williams is the neighbor.
Oh, Terry. Oh, no.
So at this point, the investigators are like, okay, well, what does Terry Williams know?
Yeah.
Let's find out about Mr. Williams. So they start, you know, investigating him a little bit, and they actually go up to his door, and they knock on it, and they want to just have a chit-chat with Terry.
Let's have a talk. Tell me everything you know.
So the investigators are standing there at Terry's front door, and they're talking to him, and guess who comes out of the back room?
With no clothes on. It's Heather.
It's Heather.
Oh, God.
She does have her clothes on, but they need a little straightening. We're still
She's disheveled.
We're still straightening as we're coming into view. No.
Like, who's at the door, babe?
So it's pretty obvious that these two are romantically involved with one another.
God. What a piece of shit.
So she comes out yelling at the investigators, at Terry, and she makes a phone call to Ethan.
Yes.
In front of the investigators. And she is telling Ethan that Terry is about ready to roll on them. And when the private investigators hear the words, roll on us, they're like,
what?
Did she
Why would she say that in front of the police?
Like, what can they roll on you about if you haven't done anything? And these aren't the police. These are the private investigators. These are not law enforstment officers.
Okay.
They cannot arrest. They cannot arrest. But they can testify in court as to what they heard.
Yeah.
And one of them is a lawyer, and one of them is an ex-police officer.
Why would you say that in front of them? She's a moron. Heather's a moron.
So they're like, holy hell, did she just admit that she did something wrong?
Yes.
So investigators leave. Like I said, they can't really do anything. She hasn't really technically admitted anything.
And they can't arrest her anyway, but they can't arrest. They're just gathering information.
They're just gathering information, and now they're like, we've got to dig in deeper here now.
Was she just like, hey, I'm at the neighbor's house, and I just so happened to be in his house, and
you know how I was banging my neighbor? You know how I like banging the neighbor while you're at work?
What? That's so weird.
So the next part's even weirder.
Okay. Lay it on me.
It's at this point that Heather decides that, you know what? I am going to throw out the playbook and we're going to audible here. We're going to go rogue. She calls the Charleston Police Department.
And tells them.
And says, hey, is it cool if I come down and talk to the lead investigator of this Kate Waring thing?
So she's going to try to get ahead of it before she's behind it in all the shit. Okay.
So it's 10.
I wonder what story she's going to work up.
So it's 10 weeks after Kate's disappearance. This is August 17th, and Heather Camp has come into the police station on her own, no lawyer, and she's come freely. She can leave at any time, and she begins to make a statement. Her statement begins by admitting that she and Ethan had been stealing for Kate for several weeks.
Before she went missing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Heather indicated
to Is that why they were getting dinner that night, so Kate could confront her friend and his girlfriend?
Don't jump ahead.
Oh, okay.
Heather indicates to the detectives that Kate was aware that they had tried to cash several checks. And Heather had also taken out a credit card in Kate's name.
And we don't even know if Kate had any credit. She had $200 in her bank account. Of course, they'd been stealing from her for X amount of weeks, so... Huh.
At this point, Heather tells police that Kate had said something to them about it. And Kate told him that she was not going to press charges, but they needed to give her money back.
So this dinner literally was a come-to-Jesus moment. Like, I know what you're doing. I thought we were friends. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this to me? Oh, God. Oh, Kate. Sad.
So according to Heather, Ethan invited Kate out for dinner on the 12th so that he could confront her.
Why is he confronting her? What's there to confront about?
I'm not sure. Because they're the ones that have been doing everything, but you know...
If you're doing something wrong to... Yeah.
They're trying to get in front of it, like you said. They're trying to... They're going to try to make Kate feel like shit.
Yeah. Like she's doing something wrong. Or like...
You've got all this money.
Why don't you just give us...
You know...
Throw us a bone here. We've been struggling. Best friends forever. Oh, God.
Heather told the investigators that they decided to go back to Ethan's place after dinner, have a few drinks... And none of this would have been unusual, except for what we know now.
Well, yeah.
They hung out all the time. So Kate has no reason to have any fear or anything. That's why she sent that text to Howard saying, yeah, I'm hanging out with Ethan and Heather at 10 o'clock. I'm hanging out with them, driving around, driving back over to Ethan's house.
We're going to go over to their house and hang out.
So all three of them are back at Ethan and Heather's house. They're drinking. At some point, according to Heather, Ethan and Kate get into a screaming argument. And it is at this point that Ethan grabs a wine bottle and cracks Kate over the head. With her unconscious, he then drags her down the hall and fills up the bathtub. And according to Heather, that's when Ethan drowned Kate.
Oh my God. I wonder, did Ethan counter this and say, no, it was Heather?
Remember, Heather's come of her own free will. Ethan probably doesn't even know she's at the police station.
So she doesn't care to throw him under the bus.
This is her going to get... This is her story.
Gotcha.
She says she was there for the murder, but she has no idea where Kate's body is. When asked why she didn't come forward sooner...
Yeah.
Heather indicated that she... was fearful for her life, thinking that if Ethan killed his best friend...
what's he going to do to me? And he...
because they've only been dating for a few...
probably knows that I'm banging the neighbor. Although, I don't believe a word she says, and I think she did this, not him. But that's just me. But I'll let you finish.
I just can't get over, and I even wrote it down, you've already said it, that she's just throwing Ethan under the bus, and she backed that bitch over him, too. Like, she fucked this guy.
Yeah.
So, at this point, police place Heather under arrest. She's already admitted to forgery and obstruction of justice.
And being present at a murder and not reporting it. Yeah. Under arrest.
Police then go and pick up Ethan Mack and place him into custody, and they begin to interrogate him. Now, I would also like to point out at this time that at no point during either of their interrogations...
No lawyer
present. Stay stupid, you dumb motherfuckers. Ethan Mack is under arrest for forgery and obstruction of justice, and that's all they've got him on. They got him dead to rights for that. They've got him on tape. You know, they know the thing's a forgery. And during the interview, the detectives confront him and they say, you know, you're under arrest for this and not for murder. And Ethan actually looks at the detective and says, no, but that charge is coming, isn't it? Like, he knows.
Ethan.
He knows that that charge is coming.
Well, yeah.
Ethan also admitted, just like Heather did, to the forgery and saying that he had nothing to do with Kate's disappearance.
Hmm.
And prosecutors know that without a body, it's really he said, she said, and it's still just a missing person. There's no physical evidence pointing to the fact that Kate is actually dead. All we have at this point is Heather's word.
And she's a liar.
She's a serial liar. So the police investigators are kind of like, all right, the private investigators are like, all right, let's do a Hail Mary here. They're both in custody. They ain't going anywhere. Let's go down and just talk to Heather one more time while she's in jail. She's been in there for a week or so. They've both been in there for a week or so. Let's just go chat her up. And this is just like the movies, where they have the glass in between them, and they're talking on the phones, and you can see other people who are talking to other visitors, because that's how they're coming in. The private investigators are coming in as visitors. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't you know that just a couple of stalls down, who would else be talking to a visitor that same day? Ethan. So now Heather and Ethan are both in the...
they're in the same jail?
Men
and women?
They're in the same jail. They're not at prison. The jail has different sections. They haven't been sent to prison yet. They're just holding them in the county jail. And yes, the county jail holds both men and women.
Really?
They're not in the same damn rooms together, but they're going to be in the same...
facility?
Same facility, yeah, until they go to prison.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah, if you get sent to county jail tonight and I go with you, we're going in the same van probably, but once we get there, we're going to get processed and sent to a different area, honey.
Oh. I thought those
it's
were
jail.
All separate.
No, they ain't building two damn jails. They building a jail.
Huh.
So Heather can see Ethan being interviewed by some...
giving, like, hand signals and neck jerks and...
well, she's looking over at Ethan.
Yeah.
And at this point, this is when the private investigators look at her and they're like, you know what he's doing right now?
Confessing.
He's confessing. He is throwing you under the bus. You are fucked.
Yeah.
You need to be the first one to get this statement out. So at this point, Heather is like, fuck. If you give me a deal, I'll tell you where the body is.
God damn. What a stupid bitch. Because that's not what was happening.
No, it wasn't.
Oh, my God. She cracked like an egg.
In a very short period of time. Very short period of time.
Yeah.
The private investigators pull up on their phone a map of the area and ask her to point out where the body is. And she points to an area on Wadmalaw Island, which is right in the same vicinity of James and John's Island. Not very far away at all. At this point, the private investigators go out to Wadmalaw Island and begin searching in the general area where Heather had pointed to. It doesn't take...
heavily wooded?
It's very wooded.
Yeah.
It's a very... you know,
forested area.
Forested, wild area. There's no houses anywhere near it. Nobody to see you, no streetlights, nothing like that. They come across, after a little while of searching, they come across some skeletal remains.
Oh my God.
The two private investigators immediately back out of the area and call the Charleston Police Department, because at this point, their investigation is over if this is in fact the body of Kate Waring. They don't have the resources to process a possible murder scene.
Yeah.
It is October 10th, 2009, nearly 4 months after Kate Waring went missing. Investigators believe they have found the remains.
Damn.
It's not until after the coroner confirms that these are, in fact, the remains of Kate Waring that both Heather Camp and Ethan Mack are charged with her murder. And this prompts Heather to try to cut that deal. Mm-hmm. Heather would get a reduced sentence so long as she cooperated fully and truthfully. The only problem with
she can't tell the truth.
She can't tell the fucking truth.
God.
October 5th, 2010, nearly a year and a half after Kate's murder, Ethan Mack goes on trial for murder. Ethan's defense team does not deny that he was present when Kate was killed.
But he's going to peg it on Heather, and then she has obviously already pegged it on him.
They claim that Heather was the killer. Ethan's defense team said that he was the facilitator, but not the murderer. He got her to the place where Heather killed him, but he didn't actually do the killing.
And maybe unknowingly, I don't think he did it. Or did he do it? Or we don't know.
We're getting there, baby.
Okay. I don't think he did it. I'm locking that in.
He had gotten her to the house, but he had not bludgeoned her to death with the wine bottle. So the wine bottle is apparently the method.
The murder weapon.
The coroner couldn't, based on the decomposition of the body and the lack of remains, he was unable to say for sure the cause of death. Ethan and Kate were best friends.
Oh.
That's the thing
that's horrible.
That's the thing that kills me.
Maybe he was like, hey, just come over and hang out. He didn't know what she was going to do. But he also didn't say anything for 4 months.
And he lied multiple times.
Damn it.
And this is where I wrote down, what a piece of shit. Like, he's literally known
your
Kate.
Your best friend.
You know how long he's known Heather?
Oh, like 5 minutes?
About 4 or 5 weeks.
Oh, God. She was just master manipulator.
I wrote in here, Heather played him like a fiddle.
Yeah.
She had him convinced that she was having his baby, which she later said that she lost in prison.
Which was probably a lie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God. And she was fucking the neighbor.
And she was fucking the neighbor. At no point did Heather love Ethan.
No. She was just greedy and jealous.
Yeah. Oh. So I was noticing, because they got to show a bunch of trial footage, and I noticed that Ethan's face, he looked like a baby deer.
Yeah.
Eyes wide. Scared fucking shitless.
As he should be. You're on trial for murder. Of your literal, one of your favorite people on planet Earth.
Yeah. Now I juxtapose that to Heather's face when she takes the witness stand against Ethan, because she does testify against him for her plea deal.
Mm-hmm.
She is fucking stone cold.
Doesn't give a shit.
No.
Annoyed that she's there.
No smiles, no tears, playing fucking poker the whole time. However, one problem with the prosecution is that their fucking, you know, witness is goddamn liar, and Ethan's...
So this is Ethan's trial.
This is Ethan's trial. Heather's already done a plea bargain. She's testifying against Ethan so that she can get a reduced sentence. The only problem for the prosecution is that Heather can't fucking keep her lies together, and Ethan's defense team picks her apart on the stand. Points out multiple times where she's lying in the days that she's on the witness stand, because she's up there for a couple of days. She testifies for several hours, and there's no way that she can keep all of her lies straight.
Yeah. Like, it's one thing to keep them straight in one setting where you're just telling a story, but then you gotta remember that story. And then you gotta remember all the things that everyone else said and make sure not to say that and stick to what you said in the first place. Ugh.
So, after all said and done, after about 14 hours of deliberation, the jury announces their verdict. Ethan Mack was found guilty of obstruction of justice and forgery, but the jury was deadlocked on the murder charge, causing a mistrial. The prosecutors plan to try Ethan again for murder due to the mistrial, but at some point in between the trial dates, he's still in jail. He gets a phone call from his mother while he's in jail. And while we don't know exactly what was said, because while the things are taped, they didn't release it. It sounds like she had the conversation with her son along the lines of, I didn't raise you like this, and it's time for you to step up and be a man and do the right fucking thing.
So he did do it.
What he did was he pled guilty under what's called an Alford plea,
mm-hmm.
which means that he is not admitting any guilt, but he is saying that he would be found guilty if he is put up for trial for it.
Yeah.
So what, without admitting guilt, he is sentenced to 25 years based on this plea agreement that he makes. Heather Camp, on the other hand, is sentenced to 39 years.
Good. Well, good for both of them. I hate that he was her best friend. I hate that. That is so fucked up.
The thing that kills me is that it was 6 weeks from the time that she met Heather Camp to the time that she was dead. 6 weeks. She had known Ethan for years.
Yeah.
It only took Heather 6 weeks.
Yeah.
To poison his mind.
Sink her hooks into him.
And
like, oh, your best friend is rich? Let's just steal from her. And then if she gets mad about it, we'll just kill her.
Mm-hmm.
God, mm-hmm. Ethan. I hate both of them.
Yeah, I really don't have any respect for her at all as a person or a human being. And
him to be so weak.
Yeah, that's the thing. It sounds like this was his first, like, serious kind of relationship. And that
6 weeks. How can you be that
serious? 6 fucking weeks. So I do have a few fun facts to lighten the mood for that fucking horrible story. Do you want to hear them? Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. The first golf club in America was established in Charleston in the year 1787.
I did know that. And I think I heard that on a podcast, and they said the first golf club was established, and I thought they meant like
a club that you hold in your hand.
Golf club.
Shit.
And I was like, oh, golf was created here. That's fun.
Oh, God.
Club as in an establishment, not the hitting implement.
Correct. Oh, honey. Do you know why South Carolina is called the Palmetto State?
Because of the trees? We got the trees.
We do. It's in reference to the sable palm tree, and it's our state tree. But do you know why?
Why do we have palm trees?
No. Why is it our state tree? Why?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, so this goes back quite a ways. So this goes back to the Battle of Sullivan's Island. It is the first decisive victory by the Americans over the British Royal Navy during the Revolutionary War, and it took place on June 28th, 1776. Fort Sullivan was built out of mostly sable palm tree and sand, so when the British were bombing it with their cannonballs, it's a very spongy wood, the cannonballs were bouncing off.
Oh, look at us.
It was renamed Fort Moultrie, which I believe you visited. I know I have. After Colonel William Moultrie, who had led the defense.
Neat.
Okay. One more fun. This is not a fact. Actually, it kind of is. This is a fun idiom.
About Charleston?
No, just in general. Because we did those idioms this last time, and I thought they were fun. So do you know what it means to let the cat out of the bag?
I don't.
All right, honey. This refers to a naval punishment. You've heard of the Cat of Nine Tails? Where they would whip the soldiers with. Well, legend has it that it was stored in a bag. And if one sailor would rat out another sailor about his misdeeds, it was saying that that sailor had just let the cat out of the bag and got that man's ass whooped.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
I like that. That's fun. Oh my God.
So that is that on that.
That was horrible.
Yeah, God.
Killed by your best friend and friend who you introduced to each other.
6 fucking weeks.
Oh, Kate. So sad. I hated it.
She had such a bright future. Honestly, so smart. Able to pick up languages. Apparently, like, you pick up garbage off the side of the road. It's amazing.
I know. Damn. Well, thanks for that, honey.
I guess you're welcome.
Oh, before you go.
We have got a Patreon.
Well, we do have a Patreon. Patreon.com/#murder. And we have an Instagram. Go follow us there. It's @#murderpod. Spell it all out.
We love y'all's comments, questions, and ideas. Lay them on us, guys.
Yeah, please do. We love talking to everybody.
Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. If you only give us 4 stars, we're inclined to believe that you are a hater.
Yes. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff.
But thank you for spending time with us, most of all.
Yeah. No, we really appreciate it. And we're working on some good things coming up.
We sure are.
Yes.
We sure are. All right. Well, thanks for hanging out, guys. We love you. Bye.
Wait, I have to do it.
Yeah, I know. You're not helping out here.
Thanks for hanging out. Love you.
Bye. Hey, if you got a best friend, why don't you try asking her for money instead of murdering and stealing from her?
Bye, bye, bye.
Love you. Bye. Be fun. Have safe.
Be fun. Have safe.
Thank you for listening to Hashtag Murder. Episodes are written by Scarlett Hibden and Dustin Branton. Editing is done by Scarlett Hibden. Intro and outro is written and performed by Derek Branton. Our cover art is designed by Lauren Walker. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or case ideas, please reach out to us on Instagram at #MurderPod. Spell it all out. We love interacting with our listeners, and don't forget to tell all of your friends about us. Thanks. Bye.
I was absolutely killing it, and then you were like, oh, let's quit.
Why are you not joining me?
Sorry.
Okay.
Is it okay? Mm-hmm. Okay! Mom, can we back that out?
You just made that up?
I think I did.
What?
I thought that no, I'm remembering from last week. Can you cut that out?
Sure.
Okay. We should know that we go about this very differently. Like, I don't read every single word that I have written down here. How could I possibly know that? How could I possibly know that? Probably when I talk to them, it sounds like clicks and pops. Right? It's so bad, because I'm, ugh. When his dad, bum, 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 bum. The private investigators about a suspicious, holy hell.
On James Island.
Oh, sorry. They after the battle, after